it's time for the Talk of the Nation opinion page. It took weeks of wrangling and written promises to keep his nose out of the editorial process, but Rupert Murdoch is finally set to take control of the Wall Street Journal. More specifically, his company, News Corp, will take over Dow Jones, the company that owns the Journal. Still, just the name Rupert Murdoch sets off alarm bells in certain circles. Some reporters at the Journal see the takeover as a disaster, and there is no shortage of readers who worry about the integrity of the newspaper. Rupert Murdoch's reputation precedes him. As Alistair Campbell wrote in an op-ed in yesterday's New York Times, he's been demonized as the great media boogeyman of our time. Yet when it comes to Murdoch and the Wall Street Journal, he argues, there's nothing to be afraid of. What about you? If you're worried about the takeover or what Rupert Murdoch's influence on his other papers bodes for the Journal, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also let us know what you think on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Alistair Campbell served as an advisor and spokesman for former Prime Minister Tony Blair. He has a book out about that called The Blair Years. A former journalist, he also worked at a Murdoch paper once upon a time. Campbell joins us now from a studio at the BBC in London. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Hello there.
And you wrote that Rupert Murdoch is a businessman first and a journalist second. Why should readers of the Journal not worry?
Well, I think it's fine to be worried, but and if people want to worry, that's their prerogative. But I do sometimes think that Rupert Murdoch is judged according to an analysis of him that is a little bit outdated. And as I said in the piece in the New York Times, it's almost as if all the ills of the media world are put upon him, when actually the media is just it's such a changed thing to what it was 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago. Now, some of that is down to Rupert Murdoch, but I just think he's one of those people about whom any sense of perspective is kind of lost.
Well, one of the perhaps the I guess the most closely watched analog is Rupert Murdoch's purchase of the most distinguished paper in Britain, the Times of London, and the way he's changed that newspaper.
Yeah, but you name me a newspaper around the world that hasn't changed in some way in the last few decades. Now, the British media is a very look. I am one of the British media's biggest critics. And but I think that what happens sometimes is that the whole of the media finds it convenient to have this kind of Murdoch bogeyman figure out there, because it then means that they don't have to sort of address other failings within the whole media infrastructure. So the Times, yes, the Times is not the paper that it was. It is, for example, a tabloid. Well, lots of broadsheet papers have gone tabloid. That's a product of changes in the way that people want to consume news, what news is, what newspapers have become. I think the single biggest change in the media in the last decade or so has been the advent of 24-hour news as the thing, if you like, that conveys, has the monopoly on the here and now. Newspapers have become very different things. So the Times of London used to pride itself on being a paper of record. Well, a newspaper that just wants to see itself as a paper of record is going to get swept away by the 24/7 and internet media revolution. So, yes, it's changed, but I could take you through every single national newspaper in the UK, and I could find those that have changed in for technological reasons, those that have changed for political reasons, those that have changed because of other industrial change that's gone on. I mean, it's just, I think we live in a world defined by the pace of change, and the media has been a very, very big part of that.
You pointed out the biggest change in the news media in the past 20 years or so has been the 24-hour, 7-day-a-week news cycle. And, of course, Mr. Murdoch, through his ownership of Sky News in Britain and Fox News in this country, has something to do with that, too.
Absolutely. And you see, the point I made in the op-ed is, look, in a sense, I think that I made the point that it's his fortune, in a sense, to be seen as this bogeyman figure, because it gives him this kind of extra edge, as people are slightly mesmerized by him, whatever he does. But actually, it's you just take the television thing. When I mean, Murdoch, in the end, he's a risk-taking entrepreneur. I can remember when Sky News was launched here, and there was a very, very prevailing opinion that it just wasn't going to survive. And likewise, I think a very similar reaction when Fox came along, that it wasn't really going to sort of be able to break into the American TV market in the way that Murdoch was suggesting that it would. Well, it seems that he appears to have been successful. Now, whenever I go to America, people talk about Fox. They maybe talk about it in disparaging terms, but they seem to be watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just think he's used the kind of bogeyman status, in a sense, to let other people take the eye off the ball. And he doesn't take the eye off the ball, and he just kind of plows on.
Mm.
And so I don't know. I think I'm not saying whether the judgment is harsh or not harsh. It kind of doesn't matter. What matters is that in that world of change that is the modern media, it seems to me most of the time he's just a couple of steps ahead of a lot of his rivals.
Now, you cite a fascinating anecdote where some people worried that Rupert Murdoch was getting a little too old, and he cited his examples of getting out ahead of the technological curve and things like cable television news and the internet, and said, look, I'm afraid that you guys, his junior managers, are too old.
Well, no, that apparently was. I spoke at one of his conferences.
Ah, I see. Okay,
wasn't that one? But I've been at those events where, in fact, I went to one with Tony Blair in 1995 or six in Australia, where you do get us. And this is the other point I make: is that look, we are kidding ourselves if we pretend that big proprietorial figures in newspapers down the years do not exercise some kind of influence. They exercise influence through the people that they appoint to the top jobs, and they exercise influence by those people knowing that ultimately they can, in a sense, they have more power within the organisation. Now, Rupert Murdoch is somebody who understands and is not afraid to exercise power within his own organisation. But my point is that the point I was making there is that he was making absolutely clear that he's going to be deal breaking and deal making to the grave.
Yeah, and it's also there was again going back to the case of the Times, there were all sorts of assurances ahead of time, committees established and whatnot to make sure that Rupert Murdoch would not interfere in the Times coverage, and not its editorial page. Owners are generally accorded some amount of freedom on their own editorial pages, but in terms of its coverage, and a lot of people would say that agreement wasn't worth the paper it was printed on.
Well, it may, and I don't know. I mean, I've not. I actually do write the occasional piece for the Times, and I don't know what the guys who work there today say about interference or non-interference. I mean, I have to say that when I was working for the Prime Tony Blair, and we were obviously interested in which way this newspaper or that newspaper was going to go,
mm-hmm.
They did seem to have an awful lot more freedom than sometimes they get credit for. I mean, for example, I saw recently the then editor of the News of the World, which is a big-selling Sunday tabloid. And, look, I'm out of the job that I was doing, and he's now out of the job that he was doing at that time. He swore blind to me that he was the one who made the decision in 1997 to switch from Tory to Labour. That was not, as it were, a direct instruction from Rupert Murdoch. I think The Sun, which is the best-selling daily tabloid in the UK, my sense is that Rupert Murdoch has always taken a pretty close and direct interest in the politics and political coverage there. But again, you talk to the people there and they say that this was them being driven by where they felt their readers were going. So I think in terms of, Rupert Murdoch is a... when you read the list of different media outlets and business interests that he's got, I don't think he has time to interfere directly in too many of these, but I suspect that insofar as there is interference, is because people know what he thinks.
Mm-hmm. Let's get some listeners in on the conversation. Again, our guest is Alistair Campbell, a spokesman and advisor to Prime Minister Tony Blair from 1994 to 2003, author of the book The Blair Years. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. And let's start with Alex. Alex with us from Fort Lauderdale.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air, Alex. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I just want to ask the gentleman that's on the air, don't you think that affects our democracy in a very negative way. Only a few companies own all the newspapers, all the TV networks, and they can easily get together and pretty much convince the American public and pretty much the world public to whatever they want, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they can just hide anything they want and just feed us whatever they want to feed us.
This is another example of the consolidation of the media, another independent voice being swallowed up by a large conglomerate. Our listener, Alex, thinks that's inherently a bad thing.
Well, I think it's inherently a bad thing if there is too much concentration of media ownership in a relatively small number of hands. But the point I was making earlier about the world being defined by the pace of change, there is now so much media out there. There is 24/7 TV and radio going around the globe all the time with an explosion of different outlets. Within newspapers, I think there is... I think it would be better if there were more people owning newspapers in your country, in our country. But in a sense, unless the legislators are going to legislate and regulate in a way that were broken up more, then if you're the businessman, if you're the Rupert Murdoch figure or you're one of the other media owners there, in a sense, you just have to play the marketplace as it is. So I think that, again, when I said earlier, I think that this is an argument that is more apposite and relevant to a period that has now passed, because I just think there is so much media out there now. I don't accept that, the ownership issue is the same as Alex is describing.
We're speaking with Alistair Campbell, author of The Blair Years. If you'd like to read his op-ed, which appeared in yesterday's New York Times, you can get it at npr.org/blog of the nation. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. Sean's with us. Sean from Appleton, Wisconsin.
Good day to you guys. I just wanted to bring up a point. Rupert Murdoch was actually filmed at a news conference admitting to the fact that he steered his news organizations to be a major proponent of the Iraq war before we actually went over there to manipulate the public into thinking that this was a good thing and everything else. I find it hard to imagine that a man like that, who's actually admitted to something like this, be in charge of a financial news outlet that a lot of people put a lot of trust and, into their decision making based off of the reports and everything they get out of these newspapers. So I mean, I feel that this gentleman Rupert Murdoch is he's an oligarch. He's monopolizing the print and cable and media. And regardless of what your guest says, he's basically saying that there's so many outlets out there for the public to have access to, but a lot of people don't have still access to internet and things of that nature, and all they have is the major news organizations and print media to rely upon.
Mm-hmm. And, can I just come in on that? Because
go ahead, please.
Well, it's interesting. I won't be here tomorrow. I mean, in many ways, I'd love to be joining your discussion on covering Iraq, about which I have very strong views. But isn't it interesting that you, on the one hand, you're saying, well, you've got, and if you put this call together with the previous call, there's a very, very small group of media owners who can manipulate the public into thinking whatever they want them to. Mm-hmm. And so then you say that Rupert Murdoch has told all his organizations to support the war in Iraq. Well, my very, very strong impression when I was in the United States last week is that there was a lot of hostility, a lot of anger about the war in Iraq. And I was actually quite taken aback in certain cases about the extent to which that hostility was directed towards President Bush in a really very direct and very direct way. Now, I think that the reason why people should maybe just get a little bit less aerated about some of the Murdoch ownership issues, because I just think the public now, whether in your country or in ours, are just much better at working things out for themselves. And it's like in this country, we have, and as I rage at our media a lot of the time, because I think we have a culture of negativity. I think that Tony Blair, who I think was a great reforming prime minister, probably had more bad press than any prime minister in the history of the country. And in the end, he got through it and he survived for a decade, and he went out at a time of his choosing to a standing ovation from his peers in the House of Commons. And he achieved a huge amount that he set out to achieve, as I've recorded in some detail in my book. Now, I just think that there is so much noise around the way that politics is covered, the way that other aspects of our international and our national lives are covered, that in the end the public kind of know that it's they can get there in their own way without kind of being told what to think by Rupert Murdoch or anybody else.
All right. Thanks very much, Sean.
Thanks.
And just before we have to let you go, is it accurate to believe that Rupert Murdoch does use his various outlets synergistically in support of each other, and that when he does make a decision corporately to pursue the one avenue or another, politically or not, the news coverage as well as the editorial page comes along? He doesn't endorse a candidate. His paper campaigns for a candidate.
Well, I think that, again, that is part... Look, that may be partly accurate, but I think it's, again, got to be set in the context of the world of change that I described. Because newspapers that are just kind of purveyors of news, as it were, in the old-fashioned sense, I just think are not going to survive in the 24/7 TV, radio, internet age. Now, also, I think it is true that Murdoch's editors, kind of, they do, whether we think this is a good thing or a bad thing, is they do think about what he will think of them if they take this position or that position. I've got no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. I think that that goes for other major media players as well. And look, you just got to look at the history of this, that down the years, the media has thrown up big, powerful people who like to use their newspapers to, in pursuit of their own business and commercial or political and political views. Now, that's just the history of this. The point I was making was not yes, an apologia.
And very quickly.
For Rupert Murdoch, it was to say that the media world has changed, and I think that the near hysteria there has been about his takeover of Dow Jones and the Wall Street Journal
Alistair
is an
Campbell,
argument that was rooted...
Thanks very much, Alistair Campbell, joining us from London. This is NPR News.